Hello, everyone. Welcome to myself, Max from Beanstalk. I want to introduce to you the amazing Annabelle Macon-Jones. Annabelle, say hello to everyone.
Hi, everyone.
And Annabelle, you've just got to tell us what's behind you. You've got some exquisite things behind you. So please, can you tell us what have you got lined up?
I have. So I've got my Annabelle's Deliciously British products. So nothing fresh at the moment, unfortunately, because we're still waiting to start picking on Sunday. But we've got the jams, the gin, and then we've got Tame and Wild, which is our sister company, which is all natural, low calorie, low sugar drinks, non-alcoholic, but also used as mixers. And you are having a sneak peek at
the
new packaging for this year, which is really exciting.
Look at that. Oh, that's gorgeous. Oh, that's like
a circle of life. So we're doing the full circle of life of the product and all the sustainability efforts that we have here. So yeah, you're the first guys to see that.
Okay, that's like a Farrow and Ball. What's the actual colour called? It must have some very...
Oh, God, I don't know. It's like Pantone P147 or something.
Oh, no, you got to name it. You've got to give it
Annabelle's Bloom.
Oh, Annabelle's Bloom. Right, come on. We need to tell who you are to everyone. Annabelle Macon-Jones is the founder of Annabelle's Deliciously British, and she is a curator, innovator, and champion of exquisite produce. She's a natural gift for spotting the potential of beautiful British products, and as a third-generation Yorkshire farmer, knows how to put it into effect. Annabelle's goods are all exceptional in quality, but familiar in origin. With an irrepressible enthusiasm, which you've already seen, you're going to find out more about, she creates delicacies that celebrate and sustain the diversity of the British countryside. And I love this line that, if it's okay, I just stole off your website, Annabelle. And you state, "I am now striving to ensure that my future business is sustainable and does not compromise meeting the needs of future generations." And I think that's right from the get-go. You showed us the back of the packaging and the circle of life. It just is indicative of you as an individual. And also just wanted to say you're a bit of a rock star out there. There's few people that got the sort of attention in the marketplace when we put out the promotion for this for this conversation, as you did. You're very highly regarded out there, and I'm not saying that just for the sake of it, because as we were just saying in the green room, we're really keen to meet people like you so that we all can learn from you, but also that we can encourage the younger generation to get involved in our amazing sector of fresh produce and fresh foods, and also to learn from you about business, about entrepreneurship, about women in business. But Annabelle, enough about me. If it's okay, we need to find out more about you. How did this all start? Where did it all go wrong? How did your amazing story start, please?
So start of 2004, was at Harper Adams, studied agri-food business and marketing studies, and did my dissertation, was going to set up a deli, high-end deli, lunchtime food in the middle of Leeds, and then open on sort of mid-afternoon to late evening and create really great take-home food for people that lived in apartments and only had a microwave. Got the premises, got offered the loan from the bank, and in the interim I came home to do some work for my father at the farm and never left. So the deli never happened. I had my feet firmly under the table, and to be honest with you, made some dramatic changes within my first few months of being here. And, you know, I was only 22, but I was very much aware of what needed to happen. I'd had good work experience at other places. I worked for R&R Ice Cream on the Sainsbury's and Asda account. I'd worked every summer, whether that was at recruitment agencies or in all sorts of, in a factory environment. I've worked in operations for Sleep Easy Beds. So I got quite a wealth of knowledge at quite a young age from working in the holidays. And then obviously I came here and I said, right, okay, I'm going to stay. And we started the strawberries. We started with
Annabelle, hold on. We're going to stop, but just rewind it a bit. So you've done Harper. You've done your 3-4 years at Harper. So you're all set to become the next Costa Coffee within I think you said Leeds. But so did you not contemplate just giving it a go? Or was the positive draw back to the family farm too much?
The thing was, I knew that I would always have to come home. And I think that's, you know, it was never a, there was never an option that I didn't have to come home. You know, there was a certain expectation on me and an expectation on myself, probably greater than anybody else's. And I, it was, we were at the time a business that was grading potatoes that were coming from Israel and then sending them to the packers for all of the retailers. And it was the year that Morrisons bought Safeway. So our tonnage went from 28,000 tons in a 7 month period to 62,000. And I just knew that I needed to be here and to take control of it. And once I get hold of something, okay, and I have a vision, I'm not very good at letting go. And I wasn't prepared to hand that over to possibly people that were here that I didn't feel were capable and go off and do my own thing. I felt like, you know, it was the benefit of myself and my family that I stayed at home. Okay. And so I was running that business as well as starting the strawberries.
Wow. Okay. So you had that initial plan from leaving Harper, but positive needs must. You can't come back to the family farm to take control of that. Strawberries. Where did the strawberries come in?
So the potatoes were very seasonal. They were sort of end of November to early May. And so strawberries, you know, after grading 62,000 tons of potatoes in the winter, arable farming in the summer was not that exciting to us, and so we decided to do something else, and that was where the strawberries filled the gap, and that kind of then made us an all-year-round business.
Okay, so with Harper, coming back to the family farm, I'm ex-Harper as well, and you all have a number of your chums from Harper like I have. Some of them didn't want to come back to the family farm because they just knew that they would meet resistance. It's always been done this way, son, daughter, we're not going to change. With your family, if it's okay to ask, were they positive about change? Were they positive about you coming in and positively shaking up the farming business?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, this chat, actually, because, you know, we do all sit around the table and have these conversations, especially the ones of us that have gone home. I was very fortunate. My dad is a guy, an ideas guy. He's not particularly a day-to-day management guy. And he was very happy for me to get on with it. He didn't want to do it. So it's really quite interesting because how the business has changed in the last 17 years. I mean, just jumping ahead to the last year and the success of what I'm doing, you know, I've gone from 7 people in the office to 15. Wow. And that's a huge change for my dad because, you know, I've implemented an awful lot of IT systems. I tell him, well, I'm sorry, you can't do that anymore and you can't do this anymore. And there's times where I see that he's really proud of how we're progressing. But then there are other times where I think he thinks, oh, my God, like, what is she doing now? And it's finding that balance. And also it's being respectful that, you know, that you don't kind of undermine what he's done and you know, upset the apple cart, really.
Yeah, so one of my best friends from Harper, I remember sitting on, we were talking about tractors earlier, I remember sitting on his JCB in the late 90s on his farm, and he in tears because he wanted to do so much with the farm, but his father wouldn't let him. And he said to me, Max, the only way that I can develop this farm is for my father to be carried out in a box.
Yeah. I think that's the majority, really.
Well, unfortunately, that's what did happen. And this individual then went on to set up a very successful cider business, sold it to C&C, and has now gone on and bought 2-3 farms. And when we talk about it at a night when we're reminiscing, I bring this up, and he said, it's such a shame because I could have been 20 years in front of myself if my father had allowed me, but he hadn't. So what, it's great to see an example. Would you say your family, would you say your father, a bit like a critical friend, that they're here to help you and give you that support, but also they're to bump you along the way as required, just to give you some equal positive but cold measure?
I think my mum actually is amazing with me. You know, I don't honestly think I'd be sat here doing what I'm doing without her. And that's just from a perspective of support. My dad, I've learned a lot from my dad. He really taught me how to deal with the retailers. And my strong personality definitely comes from him saying to me, never give in. And, you know, sometimes that's a positive for some and a negative for others. But, you know, when it's yours and ultimately it's your bank balance, then you know, the person that fights the hardest should hopefully come out the best.
Yeah, well done. And then go back to strawberries. I presume that was easy to set up, was it? Really easy.
Easy to set up?
Yeah. Well, come on, guys, we're doing nothing during the summer. We're just playing around with cereals. Let's get into strawberry farming. This will be easy. Look, they down southeast, they're doing it. We just duplicate one. How hard was it to set up your strawberry enterprise?
So we started one field, which was 15 acres, and it was all on raised beds on the floor. And that was summer that we had so much rain that the strawberries were actually sat in the water, in the rows. And I mean, we're on limestone as well, so we're on good ground. And it really was food for thought. So we didn't expand in year two. We stuck at the 15 acres and then we put another field in. And it's just been a learning curve the whole way through. Some things have worked, some things haven't. We've been expectations on us from some retailers and then they've let us down. So, you know, we may have had an empty field or we've changed the way we've done things, overwintering, then not overwintering. Wow. I think everything that, you know, no season is ever the same. And I think that's what's exciting about this business is it's so fast paced and you are forever on your toes because you just don't know what's around the corner. I mean, if you look at this season, we are basically 20 days late because we've had such horrific weather. How would we have known that this was going to happen? Last year we had a great season, like the best season we've ever had.
So just hold my hand and take us out into the business. What will we see? How big is the strawberry enterprise? How if you're still doing, what would we see? Just to discuss, describe your enterprises at the moment, please.
Okay, so we are seven fields of strawberries, one being empty at the moment because of a retailer not wanting it. But I believe the brand is now strong enough to take on that field itself next year without touching any major retailer.
Okay.
We grow everbearers and June bearers, 5 to 6 different varieties, and with trials. We generally start mid-May under poly. We overwinter one field, hopefully for an early crop, which has not worked for this year. However, it is good berries. And then we have a continuity then, and all the fields follow along, and it basically takes us to the middle of October, as long as we don't get too cold at the end of September. And then we then utilize the waste that we have, you know, the smalls, the, you know, stuff that's not good enough for retail. And we're now using that in jams and chutneys, in drinks, in gin, in yogurt. And what else are we doing? There's a few things on the agenda. Which I'm not at liberty to discuss just yet, but there is more ideas because I like working with people who are great within their area. I'm good in mine. So bringing them together, I'm not trying to create a whole new category for myself. I just want to join up with other great people to create a great product.
And that's a product that you're growing. Where is that going? Is that mostly going to UK retail?
So Annabelle's is... what is it? Probably a third to Dubai and Hong Kong and Japan. And then the rest is UK.
Wow. So hold on, back up the bus. Dubai, that's just an amazing story, amazing success story. How did that happen?
It's actually quite a fun story. We went on holiday a couple of years ago when Annabelle's had just been going 6 months. And my husband and I, as sad as this may sound, he was a buyer of frozen fruit and veg, a supplier of frozen fruit and veg. And we decided to go into a Spinney's store and have a look around. And we came out there and I was like, oh, that is who I want to supply. This Annabelle's would be perfect in here. You know, the expats, the love for the British products. So came home, took me months to even find a lead. Found one eventually. Turns out the buyer was an ex-retail buyer from a retailer that I supply in the UK and had done previous to starting my brand and everything that the brand was about. And I was met with a bit of opposition as in, well, why are you anybody special? Or what are you doing that's so great? Why on earth would I want your strawberries? And so you know, that to me, that challenge is really exciting. And I just chipped away, and told him everything we were doing and sent the packaging and showed him, you know, what we're trying to achieve on the farm and that we're supporting charities, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, well, go on then, I'll give it a go. And it absolutely flew out of the door last year.
Did it?
So much so that I'm doing all 68 Spinney stores in Dubai and 14 Waitrose stores this year.
That's amazing. I always think of Tiptree, and shoot me for using this example, but is it Tiptree that they've got a concession store in Southend Airport? Because bizarrely, there's a lot of Asian tourists that come in. And so Tiptree's doing very well in Asia because it's quintessentially British, as is Annabelle's. So you've corrected that magic dust. So that's brilliant about Spinneys and Waitrose out there. Is this something that you can further accelerate, do you think, into other areas like the likes of Asia?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Hong Kong and Japan, we were really well received.
Wow.
But we only started towards the back end of last year. So, I mean, that's very new for us this year. And we'll see how that goes. But I, you know, primarily the most important thing is, you know, UK, we get that right. And then to build on those relationships outside of the UK.
Okay, and without going into facts and figures, for a business, supplying the likes of Hong Kong and Dubai, does it work for you as a business?
Japan's very difficult to make it work because they are so picky. Then they're actually more about the appearance than they are about the flavour. So yeah, they have to sit on a perfect little sheet that's got little bits in where you put the strawberries in, which obviously incurs an awful lot of cost with picking it, packing it separately, much smaller punnet. Yep. You know, we're trying to encourage them to go to a bigger punnet because that's what we did when we started as Annabelle's. We went against the grain of what the retailers were doing. You know, the retailers are driving, you know, 2 for £3 or whatever, and they're just making the pack size smaller and smaller. Yep. They're all declaring that, you know, we don't want packaging and waste or this and the other, but they're making the packaging size smaller. So they're using actual more packaging to sell that volume of product. We went against the grain and introduced a 500 gram, which is a much better punnet size for a family. And we also introduced the 1 kilo, which you can see behind me. And that was to get away from using too much packaging. And I think, you know, sometimes these statements are actually quite contradictory on everything else that they're talking about. It doesn't always seem aligned.
Yep. And then coming back to the UK, do you serve the retailers direct or do you go through a marketing desk?
I don't serve any retailers with Annabelle's except for Ricardo and Boots. So, and no, I'm direct with everything that I do, but this is not for major retailers.
Okay. I just get confused with the likes of Dyson. So Dyson has put down a large investment of a greenhouse to grow strawberries. And then I would have thought with their name, they could have gone direct to the retailer, but they didn't. They've gone through a very good marketing desk. But then you sort of learning from your example that if you've got the tenacity to be able to knock on doors, whether it be in the UK or Dubai or Hong Kong, you can create the success yourself. And then branding wise, we were talking about in our green room about some of the limited brands.
Sorry, can I just jump in there, Max? Sorry.
Go on.
You just talked about tenacity. The hardest thing of everything that we do here, and this is totally on me, this is what I do, is the selling, and it's the never giving in, because you get so many no's and you get so many people saying, you know I'm not that interested, or they ignore you. But the commercial aspect and the selling, but you have to love what you do. If you do not exude interest and passion for your product, it doesn't matter what you're selling, you won't sell it.
Yeah, and just I've said this a couple of times before to students who listen in. If you use this correctly, all your students out there, if you use this correctly, what comes out of it? Money. orders, business. And if you look at the likes of Annabelle and her team, I can guarantee you they're not sitting behind emails. They've been very, very proactive to create those relationships and to have that point of difference. So branding wise, if you look at any retailer, there are very few brands in the fresh produce aisle. If you go to the likes of the States, the retailers are very, very welcoming about brands. Do you think our fresh produce sector in the UK would be better if we did have more influential brands? Do you think growers like yourself will be able to get more margin, that you'll be able to then reinvest into the business? Do we need more brands of fresh produce?
I think the most important thing is that the brands actually stand for something. So, you know, okay, I'm one of the few brands within fresh produce, but, you know, the majority of growers go under a retailer's packaging. What you've got to say is, well, you know, you can't have 50 different brands of strawberries out there that every farmer has their own brand.
Yeah.
Because what actually does it mean? You know, what are they doing that's different to anybody else? What are they creating? And it's the story behind it. I mean, we all know that there are, you know, growing groups out there with brands of fruit. What does it actually mean?
Yeah.
Nothing. It could be from any grower anywhere in the UK. You don't know what their methods are. You don't know how sustainable they are. You don't know what their ethos is. You have no idea. All you know is that this great big company that sells their fruit has put their name on it.
And it's well done. It's so pertinent. The chap that helped create for Noble Foods, the Happy Egg brand, David Wagstaff, I've heard him speak a number of times, and he's used this comment before. And he said that he gets so annoyed with fresh produce companies who create a label rather than a brand. And what is a label? And a brand has to be authentic and different. So it's a fantastic segue to coming on to yourself in that respect.
I think there's a lack of understanding though, Max. I think some people go, oh well, these brands are working, we'll create a brand, and they create a label and a name and they think that that's the job done. That's the last thing. It's all the stuff behind it that then creates what that brand is that actually matters.
And when you and I eventually meet up and we're around the kitchen table, hopefully with them, with your mom and pa, and you get some of your strawberries and you present them to me, what will they taste like, please? What will your strawberries taste like?
Well, it depends on the weather, doesn't it? I mean, we all know that. So hopefully not a cloudy day and then not as sweet as normal. But our fruit is, on the whole, and especially last year, was excellent because we had the right weather conditions.
Yeah, okay.
They are good size, great variety, and we choose especially for the weather that we have up here. It is a shame when you get a good week of cloudy days, and then obviously being Ocado's biggest selling English strawberries, you know, there are odd times where I do take a bit of a bashing because it's been so cloudy that they're not as sweet as the previous week, and nobody minds telling you that on product reviews.
Yeah, but please don't downgrade your amazing products, because the bit I was emphasizing was, as well as perhaps this brand, and we'll come on to that in the respect of yourself, taste. We had Richard Diplock on recently from the Sussex greenhouse business, and they're amazing growers of tomatoes. And we were having this debate online about branding, and he rightly so put me back in a box and said, Max, it's not about branding, it's about taste. If you can get someone to taste an amazing tomato, they will just buy it and buy it and buy it. If someone can taste your amazing strawberries, and fingers crossed we have the sun for it, what are they going to do? They're going to come back and buy and buy and buy. And they just explore this.
I do agree with that, Max, but I also think that we have a responsibility to educate the consumer. So, for instance, when my strawberries are not quite as good as they were the week before. And don't get me wrong, they're still very good, but they're not as good. We have to understand why that is. We're not in a factory. And if we don't educate the consumer, the retailers most certainly don't. In fact, the retailers don't really know themselves. They expect you to pump it out like you're pumping out baked beans. So if we do not, as experts within our industry, say, hang on, guys, you know, we have to understand why this is and there's a reason for it, then we allow the retailers to do what they've done in terms of size and spec, et cetera, you know, they have dictated what the consumer now thinks is the norm with their spec requirements. And that's what's caused food waste, etc.
Yeah, 6 out of 10 kids don't know where fresh produce comes from. And just on a tangent, I remember years ago, Abel and Cole, the box scheme, they were on Radio 2 talking about organics. And somehow it came to the element that they were sending out some of their citrus with ash on. And the guy on from Abel and Cole was claiming that they'd been picked near a volcanic eruption. And that's why the citrus had ash on, because they, and that's how authentic our fruit is. Probably yeah. a bit of an extreme example, but yes. It is that age-old problem with the consumer, isn't it? That they think that a strawberry, a apple, a carrot, a can of baked beans is going to be of a certain size and a certain.
But it just shows how out of touch we have allowed the consumer to become, because we have been dictated to for so long by these retailers, and this is what you're going to put on the pack, and this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to say it, and we're going to say it for you. We've lost our voice.
Okay.
And that really is what Annabelle's was about to bring back a voice and say, actually, hang on, this is what I'm doing.
Okay, so what are you doing?
What are we doing? Okay, so we are using less pesticides and introducing more actual bugs and pests so that we're keeping Brilliant. Chemical sprays down. We do not declare that we're organic, but we are making strong movements towards using as little as possible in terms of pesticides. We create all our own energy from our solar panels, so the site is totally self-sufficient.
Wow.
We have a 50 million gallon lake, so we collect all the rainwater from the buildings and 2 boreholes, which basically gives us the water for all the irrigation.
Wow.
We have bug hotels on site. We are basically going into all of our woodland and replanting, regenerating and creating. You know, there's a new idea here for me, but and I won't say too much, but quite an exciting project within the woodland with a product and then possibly events for consumers to come and understand what we're doing, so those that do want to understand more can come and be part of it. What else are we doing? We are using all our waste for jams, chutneys, drinks, yogurts, etc. And that is forever moving on. I work with great producers to help them use the best of British by supporting them, so they don't go and find a cheap alternative, you know, and find an easier way. You know, I try and do that, so we're using our product. And then I give to many different charities. So my daffodils, which were at the start of the season or the start of the year, I gave to Marie Curie. I give a vast amount of money to the Princess Trust for every product I sell outside of the daffodils. And then I am now looking at my new Christmas products to support a children's charity for those in poverty at Christmas. So, you know, it's all about doing good, not just for the environment, but for others. And you know, I do feel that we have there is an element that we should be looking at doing more for others and with although we're creating jobs and, you know, a lifestyle for ourselves, we should also be thinking about others whilst we're doing that.
Fantastic. And just to continue that, hugely impressive. Just continue that theme. You are a woman in business. You've already indicated it hasn't been an easy ride, especially with the likes of retailers. Where do you think we are with diversity? And let's look at fresh produce at the moment. Do you think we're in a good spot, or do you think there needs to be more to be done? Do we need more women in fresh produce?
I think we need more women across the board within farming and food, but I think again, and I think this comes back to, and I'm not talking about retail now, because I think retail has massively improved. But retail 18 years ago, when I came into this, you know, we were very much dictated to, and I think that put people off from going home and actually driving their family businesses forward, because it was low margins, a lot of hard work, a lot of investment, a lot of responsibility. And then to be dictated to and to be kind of held under the thumb as to what you could actually earn and the potential that you had. pretty daunting. And I can really understand why people didn't go home. You definitely, A, have to have a thick skin, and B, have to be able to drive yourself to the limit, especially when it's yours, because there's nobody pushing you. Yeah. The speed that you go at is determined by yourself.
Yeah. And there's a really interesting, is paradox the right word? That's that this week alone, it's been stated that there's been a huge upsurge of applications for people to get involved in social care within the UK on the back of the pandemic. But we're also seeing the same, and I think some of the agriculture universities, the likes of the Harpers of the world, other universities are available, but they're not as good as Harper. They're seeing an increase of people wanting to come into the fresh food sectors because they don't want to, become an accountant, become a banker. They want to get into a sector that's doing good. And as we all know, if you want to be...
need an accountant.
If we want this nation to be fit and to be able to cope with another pandemic, we need to eat more fresh produce. And what a great sector to be involved in. And can you imagine everyone working for Annabelle? What a joy that would be to be able to progress the business. So I think we might be in a good spot. And now's the time to bolster that, to get, I was going to say about the likes of your website, just look at Annabelle's website to see, get real understanding of the story and perhaps opportunities within the likes of Annabelle's business. I think we're going to see more people being attracted to come into the sector. And also, it might help increase the consumption of fresh produce. And what's the stat on the back of that? Kantar, to recent broadcast, stated that they've seen a 30% uptick of fresh produce sales because of the scratch cooking. Yes, that's because a lot of people aren't eating out, and that might diminish a little bit, but we hopefully see a lot more scratch cooking coming in, and more people hopefully buying the likes of your amazing fresh produce because of the reasons that you've just indicated, Annabelle, about the authentic element of it, the sustainability, the fact that you're doing good. Is there anything more that you think that you are there any speed bumps that you're hitting for you personally or your business that's stopping you go to that next level?
I don't think there's speed bumps in terms of the next level, because I do fly by the seat of my pants a little bit in terms of an opportunity comes up and I jump at the opportunity. I can't tell you what I'm going to be doing in 3 years' time. Okay. I do think there's a sticking block in terms of, again, the consumer. So, for instance, my jams and chutneys, 95% of the jams and chutneys in the UK are either Chinese fruit or Polish. And trying to get that message across and people pay a little bit more money for it because it's British is quite difficult, especially in a saturated market. It's very, very hard to market that and to get that out there and for people to pay attention. So I'd say that is one of the things that I'm finding probably the most difficult at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was wandering around Waitrose on a rare occasion the other day, and I happened to follow this slightly mature couple who arrived in a top-of-the-range Tesla, and my 13-year-old told me, oh, Dad, that's 110 grand's worth. And we started to inadvertently follow this couple round, and they got to the Parmesan section, as you do, and the man of this relationship had a choice between two Parmesans, and the lady said, oh, go for the cheaper one, we're trying to save money. But they got this it's a ridiculous, isn't it, the oxymoron of that they should be buying amazing British fresh produce to support amazing businesses like you, and that's not so that you can drive around in a Rolls Royce or anything daft like that, so you can invest in your business to do good. Bug
hotels. But it's not just even that, like, everybody loves this whole sustainability drive that I'm doing, and I'm with zero waste. Well, the only way I can be zero waste is if you buy the stuff that goes in the jars. So if you don't buy it, I can't continue to do that.
Yeah. Okay. So come on. I'm giving you that magic wand. You're now prime minister. But your main remit is to make this country healthy and to eat more British fresh produce. How are we going to do this? What's going to be on the agenda, Annabelle?
Well, I think all the retailers need to be on board. I think they all have to come together and decide how we make that happen. If they can't make a decision, then there needs to be more tariffs on food coming in. Because, when we allow, Danish pork to come in, and the standards of the pork are so much lower in terms of rearing than ours, how can we possibly compete on price? We are allowing that to happen. So make it a fair playing field.
Yeah, okay. And that's a really, really good pertinent point. In the last recession, agriculture globally was deemed to be a safe haven by the investment funds, so they poured in. On the back of the pandemic, agriculture and fresh produce is deemed to be a safe haven, especially because of the increase of fresh produce sales. So the funds are rolling in. They're very excited about this sector. Where I'm currently stood in Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk, a mile from me on the same farm that we have our offices, is a new glasshouse build that's the size of the O2, 60, 70 million pounds spent, and that's all pension fund money on the back of Brexit. And this particular greenhouse is growing tomatoes, cucumbers and peppers. Because Annabelle, as we both know, 80% of the salads that are sold in the UK are exported in. So there's a huge market potential. And those funds are getting excited about the UK not becoming self-sufficient, but being able to do more. And that's why we need to encourage businesses like you. So going back to you being PM, so we're going to get these retailers on board and to promote, allow your brand to be front and center,
but also pay a fair price and educate the consumer in how much it actually costs to produce a pepper or a punnet of strawberries, instead of them thinking, oh, just pile it high and sell it cheap. Let's go back and let's teach people to respect their food, respect what we do, and respect the investment that we make and how long it takes for us to pay it off. And not just that, the fact that there's an element of the unknown, because when the weather comes, I mean, okay, you're a little bit better in glasshouse, but for us, you know, we're two and a half weeks late now, the unknown, like, what do you do? Cash flow, wages, you know, we have to explain why this industry is so vulnerable, because a lot of the time, we're in the hands of God.
But I go back to what Kantar stated, that on the week before Christmas, Lidl was doing some ridiculous offers on standard veg, just to try and draw the consumer in. So it's like a kilo of carrots for 32p. And all the research shows from Kantar that bog-offs and deep discounting Wimbledon week, buy one punnet of British strawberries, get the other free. What a ridiculous time to do that. And that doesn't increase footfall into the retailer. There hasn't been any decent food inflation within the UK market forever. And there needs to be, but it's just that all these retailers seem to be very scared of each other, that if one pops up the price, the other one will look to expose
that. Because it's all about market share. All they're bothered about is their market share. And actually, there are people like Ocado and Boots who go, do you know what? We're not going to get into that big rat race with you. We're going to do different things to you. And it's worked for them because they offer something better. The rest of them, they're just like literally punching at each other all the time. Yeah. And we are the ones that take the flak for it. You know, find more economies of scale, look where you can save money, and then basically pass it on to us, not for us to make a bit more margin, or when we have a sticky year like this year, oh, there's a little bit of something to fall back on, or you need to reinvest it. Oh no, just pass that on to us so that, you know, we're making a bit more margin, or we can drop the price and just try and push the other people out and gain a bit more market share.
Yeah, but Annabelle, haven't you created your own route to success by dealing with the likes of Ocado, setting up amazing accounts with the likes of Dubai and Hong Kong? Haven't you realised that? And you stood out of the rat race, and you've gone to a different market that actually works better for you?
Yeah, I have, but there's an element of I still need those other retailers for other things that I do. And, the balance of the two is very important to us, but it actually... is disappointing when you see actually what you can do when you shout about what you're doing, and actually when you're driven by a retailer that, you know, the vast difference that I've made in 2 years of my own brand is just incredible. And people therefore were obviously wanting that and wanted to see something different and wanted to know who is behind the brand and how their fruit and stuff is grown. And just by elevating the packaging, you know, taking it out of plastic and giving the whole story on the box, you know, they are, it's a beautiful product. And, you know, you wouldn't go into somebody's house and throw two plastic punnets on the table and go, thanks for having me. But the packaging that I use, which is much more sustainable, you know, and almost it looks like a gift, it allows us to step into a different market because people are almost proud to take it as a gift to someone.
Well done. And just remind me, are you allowed to use your packaging, your label, your brand in any of the UK retailers currently?
Annabelle's is used across all of the people that I supply under the Annabelle's brand.
Okay.
I don't supply. From Annabelle's, the only thing you'll get is Annabelle's branded product.
Okay. And just why did it back a little bit for those fresh produce companies who might be a bit skeptical or want to create a brand and not a label? How did you go about it? How did you create this magic with Annabelle's brand? If you were advising another fresh produce company, what would you suggest to them, please? What would you advise them?
Well, for me personally, I just looked at what I wanted as a consumer and what was important to me. When I'm an Ocado shopper, and a Boots shopper, actually. So when I go in store and I look at the products, what do I want to buy? And so I suppose I base the brand on me. I was the target market, you know, my age group, my sort of credentials, my ethos, and said I wanted something transparent, something that was honest, that people can trust, so that when they buy it, they know they're being told the truth. They know that I'll be aspiring to do my very, very best to achieve, you know, the best environmental practices, working with the best charities, creating a great product and using the waste, so that, you know, they don't have to go, oh, well, hang on, what am I buying? They just know that when they see my brand, actually, we can trust it. We know what it is. And therefore, that people then become very loyal to you because they feel that you're being honest and open and trustworthy with them.
Yep, and just to reiterate again, check out Annabelle's website, and we'll stick all the links up because there's the most websites within the fresh produce sector are getting better. But if you want to see a class leading act, just have a look at Annabelle's. And just coming back to when you had this vision of where you wanted to be, I'm guessing you went to WPP marketing agency in Pall Mall, London, and threw £1 million at them and said, create me a brand. And they came back to you and said, we're going to call it Annabelle's. Talk us through that process. How did that all work?
No, so to be honest with you, you were talking about having a logo designed. I did go to somebody and said, create me a logo. This is what I want. This reflects me. And the lady did, and she did a lovely job. But then I created Tame and Wild Drinks and used a wonderful agency. Two young ladies own it, Alice and Lal of Bolter Design, and they did a great job on Tame and Wild. So we did have a rebrand shuffle at the beginning of this year on Annabelle's, and they have really taken it to the next level for me. And they're a delight to work with, and they are a huge part of the team now. You know, lot of us are women, a lot of us are self-employed, independent, and it's been fantastic to kind of broaden my horizons and spread my wings a bit. Rather than being in this kind of farm environment bubble where the people work for me, I'm now working with other great, fantastic people that a lot of farmers don't get to do because they don't have a brand.
Yeah, but and again, that's really exciting for you, for your own personal journey, isn't it? To rub shoulders with these sort of individuals who are really fascinated in your business because it's such a fascinating business, and for you to learn from them and vice versa. And Annabelle, what I really love about you is that you said earlier that I've got no idea, Max, where I'm going to be in 3 years' time. So what's my worst example of that? I know a couple that every New Year's Day they map out the whole year as to what they're going to achieve, and they stick it on their fridge. And every morning they come down and he goes to her, have you achieved that? And she goes to him, have you achieved that? Can you imagine anything so tedious as that? So with yourself, have you got a plan? Or are you literally just freewheeling and just seeing what comes at you and adjusting accordingly?
Well, in day-to-day life, I'm a real planner, and I really love organisation and you know, my routine. So I'm not going to say that I don't, because anyone that knows me would laugh if I did. But in terms of a long-term plan, I am on this train, and you know, I most certainly don't want it to stop. I'm incredibly proud of what I've created in 2 years. And when I say that, that's not in a big-headed way. I'm also really proud of how the British customer has picked it up and being so interested. I think that's fantastic. And just being part of something that's so exciting, you know, I don't want it to end. So I suppose I'll just keep driving myself at the same pace, and then you'll see things keep popping up that, you know, in different directions, not necessarily always food, but I'm really interested in the flower industry, but always British, and always to try and give good value, but great quality and, you know, great credentials behind it. And I think, you know, as long as I don't lose my way, I think I've got a very sustainable business.
Yeah, and I think you, where again, you're unique. You've got an eye for an opportunity, and you're drawn to it, which is. We'll look at the example of the strawberries that the family hadn't even considered strawberries. So then you can't come in back from Harpenden and create that. Training. So slight segue. We helped the AHDB and Nufford Scholarship and the Washable Company of Farmers and MDS with a broadcast recently. I've forgotten one of them. Because there was Ag Leadership Week last week, and there's a view that we need to get more training sorted for people within agriculture and fresh produce. Since, if it's okay to ask you, since Harper, what training have you had as an individual?
I did my level 2 and level 3 accountancy training, AAT.
Okay.
What else have I done? I did look at doing an MA.
Okay.
But that was at the beginning of this year, and then COVID hit. Beginning of last year, and COVID hit. So I didn't go forward for it because I understood that there was a lot of networking involved with that, and I didn't want to miss out and not be kind of in that space and meeting people. I think just my accountancy more than anything.
Okay, hence your point about me. Can I give you my accountancy joke? What's a 52 seater bus goes over a cliff with 50 accountants on board? What's wrong with that statement?
There's two still alive.
Yeah. so with training, if you could do when things calm down, is it something that you would look at, or would you look at for members of your team to training and development?
Yeah. So especially the business now, how you know it's changing. We are investing an awful lot into the staff and creating this real dovetail. So we've got people following on, ready to take other positions, and that gives me security. But it also gives them security within their jobs. And it's also exciting for them, you know. It's great me being on something like this and chatting, or, you know, being on Countryfile or something, or launching a new product. But it's important for them to be as enthusiastic as I am. And so I think that's with investing in them and showing them that, you know, we want them to come on the journey with us. So absolutely, we're always open to training people and doing new things. But I think now I'm getting into a position where we're much more stable. We're an all year round business. We can offer a lot more than we have done in the past.
Yeah. But there's a fantastic PowerPoint presentation from Cranfield, which basically shows that those companies that invest in training development see far better turnover and far better profitability, and they get far better staff retention. And you and I will know enough businesses a la yours, and if you look after your people, not just in terms of money, if they're really happy to come to work, and for all the reasons that we said about people looking to get involved within the sector, they're going to enjoy it. They're going to enjoy working for the business. The business is going to benefit from looking after those people. Annabelle, we're just conscious of the time. A book. It's always been said that there's a book in every person. With you, your life is a book. How far do you think you're through your book about your life? How much more is there to come?
Probably halfway.
Okay. You said earlier that you got some things that you're not going to tell us about, and I fully get that. And you don't know where you're going to be in 3 years' time, but where would you like to be? Tell us. We want to know.
I would really like to be in a position where people see Annabelle's as something quite industry leading. And that's not just within growing strawberries, because I don't have glass house and, you know, I don't pump hot air into the tunnels. And it's about it being industry leading in terms of the honesty and the trust. You know, for me, it's all about people understanding what I am trying to achieve. And even in my personal life, and again, sometimes good, sometimes bad, I'm very black and white. And, I'm not flaky. If I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And that's what I want the brand to be seen as: honest, trustworthy. And whatever it is that you're buying in 3 years' time, be it caviar, be it truffles, whatever it is, you know that whatever I've done, I've created to the very best of our ability and the best within the industry. And I think then to educate the consumer, I mean, the long-term plan for Annabelle's is to set up a children's charity where we go into inner city schools and teach them about where their food comes from. And that, you know, we said about 3 years, I would say that's probably on the agenda for 10 years, as long as I can make enough money to be able to give that money to do that.
Well,
go into London and really, you know, be able to put some time aside and show them how food is produced and then also how to prepare it, because that then creates a healthier, more educated generation.
Annabelle, I'm blown away. All credit to you. You think of lots of businesses that you and I are fully aware of, and all they operate for is money generation. And you look at what we eat out of you as to where you want you and your business to go, and the fact that you've made it on educating kids on amazing fresh produce, and what's going to be the benefit of that? That they're going to be fitter and healthier, not be a burden on the NHS and the tax system, and how that could be duplicated on a European and international basis. I've got your book that we just talked about. It's got to be called Annabelle, hasn't it?
Oh, you're very sure. You
ever
think about that and come back to me.
Yeah, I'm going to be your agent. Annabelle, just before we wrap up, people who are looking at this, who are intrigued about you and about this sector, what would your advice be as to why they should join our amazing community of fresh produce, be that in the UK or internationally? Why should they join the industry of fresh produce?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, I said I was very black and white. Don't join if you want an easy life. Don't join if you're not very thick-skinned. And don't join if you think it's 9 till 5, because you'll come and go in a flash. If you want something fun, fast-paced, very interesting, you can hold the best conversations at dinner parties, because not a lot of many people know what you're doing and that people are always interested. And you are committed, you'll have a great working life, and also you should make some money.
Boom. Annabelle, thank you. You are currently a rock star, but I can predict where you're going to be within the fresh produce sector, and anything that we Beanstalk can do to help you. I love the fact that you dropped in. Oh, I've been on Country Farm. Who's Country Farm? Anything that we or the sector can do. We'd love to see you out and about doing more speaking in the UK and internationally, promoting you, your brand, your business, and the sector as a whole. Annabelle, thank you. You're
thank
amazing.
You, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Look after yourself.
Thanks.
Thank you, Annabelle. Bye. Bye.